Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 17th of July. It's very nice to have you with us. And as we start a new week in the we're not quite in the dog days of summer yet.
No,
that's August, and it's not the dog days.
But we're such a pessimist, Joe. I keep thinking winter is coming.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, Alan. I was yesterday. I was driving home, and I saw one red leaf come off a tree.
Oh yeah, there it goes. That's the start of it.
That's the start of it.
That's the start. The beginning of the end. Though.
Yes, well, okay, I think you're right. I think there are some
of them falling down.
But some of the maples are now just starting to, like, ever so slightly.
And the ash trees are in big trouble.
So,
the ash borer.
There you go.
This is
Mind
life.
Somebody once knew.
We need to recognize this is life. If we don't go through the four seasons, it means we're dead. So let's be thankful.
Yes, well, that's true. Alan just said he was just being pessimistic. That's fine.
But that's his natural state of affairs.
Yes, it is.
I've known you for too long.
That's the beauty of Alan.
Right.
Well, good
and I'm
morning.
Seldom wrong.
Well, I don't know about that.
that's true.
Well, I guarantee you, winter is coming.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah,
you are absolutely
that's right.
Right about that.
Winter is coming.
But fall comes first.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody.
It's a beautiful day.
Welcome.
Why is everyone so pessimistic?
I'm not.
Not everybody. Only me.
See how many times we can interrupt you starting
that's
the show.
That's all right. Let me introduce everybody.
Okay,
everyone's
please.
Gotten a chance, but we'll introduce so everybody knows some that. Audio name tags here. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us playing the role of the pessimist this morning. Good morning, sir.
In the ash borer.
Did you have a lovely weekend? Did you do anything cultural? Did you do anything fun?
We did some things. I just don't remember what they were. They were good. They were all good. We actually ate lunch yesterday, and we did something we've never done. We ate lunch back over to the Red Lion.
Oh, wow.
Which is, of course, the vortex of the Berkshires. The two places you say to
is
anybody.
Is that the pinnacle or the?
No, the middle, the center.
The middle, okay.
When you say to people, name the first two things you think about when you think about the Berkshires. You're going to hear Tanglewood and the Red Lion.
That's true.
And they're so nice.
Wonderful.
Very attentive.
Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant. She celebrated her birthday on Friday, on Bastille Day, and I assume you celebrated all weekend long.
I did. Some wonderful friends had a lovely dinner Saturday night, and there were lots of activities all weekend, so it was lovely and very exciting. The big news of the weekend, of course, is that the Red Sox, Jackie Bradley Jr., stole a home run from Aaron Judge. So that topped off the weekend.
I missed that.
Amazing catch. So the Red Sox had a four-game series with the Yankees.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I wasn't there. But last night.
Are you a Red night, Sox Nation person?
Oh, she's a Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. I have the T-shirt that says, I'm for the Red Sox and anybody who beats the Yankees.
Okay. All right, fine.
And so last night, ninth inning, Red Sox up 3-0. So Aaron Judge from the Yankees hits what appears to be a home run. But
who won the home run derby, by
he
the
won
way.
The home run. But Jackie Bradley Jr. Leaps into the air and grabs.
This is the poetry of baseball.
Oh.
There are times when it is incredibly poetic and romantic.
And
boring.
The photos of this catch,
would you like to say something?
To the boring part, my brother-in-law and his son, my nephew, went to go see the game on Saturday. They went at 4:00 and they were held hostage for 6 hours innings.
It was a great game.
Yeah, no,
sadly, it didn't end well, but 16 innings.
16 innings.
Well, they didn't win all four, did they, Teresa?
Oh, no. They split it, but they're still up 3.5. They split 2-2. It was usually a three-game series, a four-game, because it was a rain.
Why don't you like the Yankees? You consider them to be imperialists?
I just don't like the Yankees.
Capitalist imperialists?
Yeah, they're bad for baseball. Okay,
well,
we're going to get hate mail.
We'll be all right.
Yeah.
I love the Red Sox.
And did I introduce you, Libby?
No.
I don't think I did. Libby Post is with us. She is a political consultant, and we're thrilled that she is here with us each and every Monday. Today being a Monday.
Right,
yes.
And I'm a Mets fan because I grew up on Long Island.
Yeah.
The Mets are good. I like the Mets.
Well,
they were better when they stunk.
Not good,
they
but
were better
watch.
When they sunk, it's true.
But it's always fun to go to a Mets game.
The new stadium's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
But it's just very disappointing because everybody starts every season with, this is going to be the year, and now they're in third place 12 games out. It's like, really?
All right. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to go full into the topics at hand and what has happened over the weekend. No, we're going to get all that. Hopefully, you got all of that out of your system. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. And be careful when you read the mail. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. It's very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. Okay, so as promised, we will get to the subjects of the day and talk about what is making news and has been making news over the past several days since we haven't been here since Friday morning. Well, we now have a delay on the Senate health care vote. Why? Because of John McCain and his eye.
No, I like
no,
it.
No, it's blood clot. Not
No. But I no, like the rhyme.
Yeah, no, it, but it's eye surgery
oh,
that goes in to get the blood clot above.
Yeah, above his eyebrow. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Joe.
A blood clot above his left eye. The Senate will delay a vote on a bill to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced Saturday night because of a new obstacle to winning enough support for one of the Republican Party's most cherished goals. Mr. McConnell said the Senate would defer consideration of the bill scheduled for this week because Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, would be absent recovering from surgery that he had on Friday to remove a blood clot above his left eye. His office says he'll be back maybe as early as this week, although the New York Times, in talking to several doctors in relation and without relation to this case, said that the turnaround on this to return to work can be much, much longer. So how long this vote is put off, we are not sure of. But we also wonder, I ask this question to Alan, which is, time, when there is more time to deliberate and talk and to find out more about these bills, does not seem to work in the favor of those supporting them.
That's true, Joe. The American people really think this bill is a stinker, and they do not want it passed, which always makes me scratch my head and wonder whether or not they have any concern what people want, or it's what they want. In
they
other
don't
words,
care what the people want.
Well, I don't know, Libby. I mean, I think that on some level they have to care a little bit. But anyway, John McCain, by the way, is no sure vote. I said that on my early commentary this morning. He's no sure vote. He's made it clear he didn't like parts of this bill. So McConnell needed a face saver, and this was the face saver. That he would, you know, basically blame it on the senator. So from where I'm sitting, this is a sort of a lost cause. Now, what they're going to try to do is to bribe everybody. Everybody gets something for the Alaska, or you'll remember John Faso and Collins got the idea that you would forbid Medicaid payments from the counties and make it go to the state. And they're working like crazy to use the people's money to build a victory here.
I think that, you know, look, all the polling shows that people do not like this bill.
Right.
Their determination to get this passed is just their abject desire to make sure that Obama's legacy is erased, regardless of the consequences for the people that they are going to rely on to reelect them.
Right.
In 2018 and moving forward for the senators, because, you know, some of them run every few years. You know, so it's just really from a PR perspective, from a political perspective, it doesn't make any sense. But then you have the Washington Post poll that showed that people, while they hate the bill, they think the Democrats don't stand for anything except being against Trump, which is what the Republicans did for 8 years. And look now who's in power. But it's so bizarre because the Republicans were only against Obama for 8 years. They were still able to win and were still seen as, you know, a stable, steady entity. And yet the Democrats now are seen as only anti-Trump, and there's no ground for them to walk on. It's very strange.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Bernie Sanders was the outlier in this election, but huge numbers of Democrats loved him. And in fact, with a little bit more of a push, he might have won the nomination. And what's interesting about that is that Bernie Sanders stood for something, you know?
Right.
So that while Hillary was sort of all over the place and vague and establishment, Bernie, like Trump, said the system stinks.
Right.
Everybody assumed Bernie, quote, couldn't win. But based on the Trump election, I'm not so sure, because there was Bernie with an idea, and it was an idea that might have seemed attractive. What do you think, Teresa?
Well, I don't think Hillary was vague. I think actually her problem was the opposite, that she was just so much detail on policy, where Bernie just focused on, you know, one or two things, said them over and over again, and he was solid on the policy, but he just picked a couple of things, which he, but in general on healthcare, I think that what the Democrats are in fact standing for something right now, which is to block this, to say no. And so I think that's, you know, when you're in the, have to be in the position of saying no, it appears that you're not for something, because what you're for is protecting healthcare. But to protect healthcare,
you have to say no.
You have to say no. And so it appears you're for nothing, but in fact, you're for a lot. But I understand the polling. But in terms of the healthcare bill itself, I was most interested in what happened at the National Governors Association. They had their summer meeting this weekend, and I listened to Vice President Pence's speech, C-SPAN, you can hear it on C-SPAN, and he got at best a tepid response, you know, polite clapping at the end, as opposed to, by the way, Justin Trudeau, who got incredible applause. But then he was followed by a presentation by experts and what this bill would mean for the states, and laid out the fact that it would be devastating economically for the states. And so this delay, who knows if they'll get a bill passed, but it really wreaks havoc economically in a lot of different ways. It leaves the insurance companies uncertain about what's going to happen, so that's going to raise premiums. But also the states now are going to be, they're going to have to resolve all of their budgets with, you know, tremendous uncertainty. So it's rather complex, but clearly the public doesn't support this bill because it's not good for them.
Real quick, Teresa, talk a little bit about the governors and the strong impact they're having in this discussion as well.
Right, so there are 33 Republican governors, if I got that number right?
Something like that.
I think it's in the mid-30s. And a number of them took the Medicaid expansion under the Obamacare, the ACA, which some of them didn't, but a number of them did. So when they talk about there are going to be 23 million people who are going to lose their health care if this bill passes, much of that is with those governors who decided to expand Medicare and bring in people who, working people who didn't have access to affordable health care, and now they do, and it's subsidized. And so, yes, the government is paying for that, but before, they were paying for it in the worst possible way. These folks who didn't have access to coverage would, when they got sick, they would delay getting care, and then they would go through the emergency room. And then they would be paid for, we'd all pay for them through
That's
the
right.
free care pool. But one of the reasons you're lowering the increase in the price of health care is because you have more people on this, you know, getting health care coverage. And so they're getting their care in a way that's less expensive. So the governors have, I'm sorry, the governor, the, circling back, the governors, it will be very expensive for them if the federal government gets out of this, because then they'll have to make decisions. Their funding will be cut, and they're going to have to make decisions. Do we fund?
They'll look bad.
Do we fund nursing homes? Do we fund
they'll
schools?
They'll have to raise taxes.
I'm going to hold you there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will consider more of this and also your letters right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post join us this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, and that is where we get letters like these.
Like these. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
I think it was Alan on Friday who mentioned that a few Congress members and senators are buying their own health insurance to avoid criticism. Remember, their staffs have full federal government health plans. Some have two or three dozen staff, and that's Jerry from Gilliland. Teresa, there is no hell without heaven. No yin without yang. No Red Sox without the Yankees. I like it.
Thank you. That's
very I like it.
Is that haiku or is it just...
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, my friend High Falls Barbara had this to say. So glad John McCain is recovering from surgery. Such an intricate operation. He must have had a great health care plan to identify and resolve this problem. Maybe he'll see the light and vote no, so others might have the same. Yeah, but he, of course, has he's a veteran.
Well, of course, they say that the way they found this problem was at his annual checkup, which, of course, with some of the Republican plans, you would no longer get your annual checkup. It would no longer be part of a mandated package.
No, you'd have the emergency room to go to, and you don't get checkups that way.
But as an aside, we all wish the best for Senator McCain. This
Indeed.
Was a very serious operation and a very serious problem, and thank God they did find it, and we wish his team speedy recovery.
Good morning. Does this make McCain the dreaded deciding vote that kills Obamacare, and does McCain risk this being his legacy at the end of so many years in government? And why should McCain's vote outweigh hearings? Why is one worth waiting for but not the other? George in Stafford, Connecticut. Good point.
Well, I think John McCain's legacy, it is a very good point. I think, as an aside, his legacy is sealed as being brave enough to, you know, withstand being held a POW.
Tortured and not leaving until the others went.
Others went. He could have left earlier, and he chose to stay with his...
And it was McCain, it was Trump who called him a loser.
Right,
because
right.
he
because
got
he
captured.
Was captured.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Okay. Good morning, esteemed panel. Good morning.
Good morning.
I see that Congress has snuck in a provision to the proposed health care bill that repeals that the repeal provisions will not apply to members of Congress. Turtle McConnell just wants the bill to be passed to repeal Obamacare, and he does not believe that anyone will allow the brutal Medicaid cuts to be really enacted. What has he been smoking? Have a great day, folks, and that's from Bill. I deny that I was the one who identified McConnell as the turtle.
No, someone else. I mean, people have been saying that for a while.
It was definitely me.
But I think the thing provisions
it was definitely
like
me.
I think provisions like that are there.
What?
Okay, whatever. I think provisions like that one are there to be taken out. I think McConnell put in a lot of things and left out a lot of things so people could make amendments to get their support. But
yeah. Okay. Well. There you go. Daisy says, Bernie could have won unless he was willing to, say, deport all foreigners and build a wall. He wasn't. It was as much about fanning hatred as anything else. Thanks, Daisy, for my vacation in Vermont. Daisy was here. We got to see her and to greet her for the great Malcolm dance.
That's right.
I disagree with her on that one, but boy, she writes she has some good
insights. As well as during the phone track.
Very good insights.
Ellen says, it is Medicaid which governors could choose to expand or not. What do we say?
I thought we said Medicaid. Did we say Medicare by accident?
Happens.
It's Medicaid.
Medicaid.
If I said
Medicaid.
Medicare, I intended to say Medicaid.
Three votes. Okay, very good.
Sorry.
Okay.
Maybe she heard Medicare. That happens too. You know, you say one or the other and then somebody hears something else.
So in the last, before we go to another break here, let's just talk that... poll numbers. I don't know what we want to make of poll numbers, but President Trump's standing with the American people has deteriorated since the spring. Buffeted by perceptions of a decline in U.S. leadership abroad, a stalled presidential agenda at home, and an unpopular Republican health care bill, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll. Approaching 6 months in office, Trump's overall approval rating has dropped from 42% to 36%.
Well, it depends which poll. There are polls that had him at 38%. So,
This is an ABC,
Washington Post.
Washington Post.
This is the the most recent. His disapproval rating has risen 5 points to 58%. Overall, 48% say they disapprove strongly of Trump's performance in office, a level never reached by former presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, and reached only in the second term of George W. Bush in post-ABC polling.
Well, it's interesting because all the analysis I saw said that this is the most unpopular in 70 years, and 70 years ago was when they started taking the poll. The polls were, so
despite the fact that Trump campaigned as someone skilled at making deals that would be good for the country, majorities also say they do not trust him in negotiations with former leaders, and in particular, in negotiations with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Right. So here's the question. What's the threshold where the Republicans will bolt?
23.
Well, we have a major disagreement on this. Teresa and I said 22.
You don't think 30, huh?
Nah. I think the numbers that they're looking at are the Republican numbers, yeah, sure. Not the overall numbers.
Right.
Those remain very high, right. And I think that these folks who are up for election really have to look at the Republican base numbers.
They don't want to get primaried.
Right. And the other poll that I think they're paying attention to, which continues to mystify me, is the stock market. I think that's one of the polls, mm-hmm, that they're paying attention to. But did you hear Jamie Dimon?
No, but please proceed.
He, on a call, and I think it was an investor's call or something, it wasn't just a happenstance remark.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Talked about how, I can't remember his exact words, but how he's sick of defending how embarrassing it is to be an American.
I think a lot of the words you couldn't say on the radio, actually.
Yeah, and really said some pretty denigrating things about the leadership situation in our country and how challenging it is for business leaders to go around the world having to deal with this, mm-hmm, the uncertainty and the certainty of what we're experiencing right now.
So,
yet the
so
stock
does he
market
think that,
is roaring. So.
Well, there are those people who think that the roar around 1929 is reminiscent of what might happen now. The question is, for all of us with, you know, Tia Kraft or whatever else, is whether it's time to move the money before there's a problem.
Well, I don't understand the market, so that's not for me to say. But I do think that they are probably paying, you know, one of the polls they are paying attention to is that the market is still doing well. And I think with this healthcare bill, one of the reasons it doesn't make sense from healthcare policy point of view, it makes no sense to keep advocating for this bill when so many people, so many organizations, the governors don't like it. But remember, the reason they want to pass this bill is not only because they made the political promise, but because they do want to pass a tax cut. And they need the revenue that they will get, mm-hmm, when they pass this bill. That means that the government will be spending far less on healthcare, and that will free up those dollars to fund the tax cut that they want to pass. And remember that tax cut is skewed dramatically to the top 1% and to the top 10%. And the bottom 80% get little or nothing of it.
And you've left out not only fund the tax cut, but fund the increase for the military, mm-hmm, budget.
Right.
What's interesting is I saw a number over the weekend that in those counties that went strong for Trump, his base is still at 50%. So it would be interesting to see if that's a drop from where it had been at, like, maybe,
sure,
60, 70, or 80.
Right.
And
it's
so
going down. It is going down.
If that's going down, we might get to that magic number.
Right.
You know, I think once we go below 30 is when they'll probably start to bolt.
But I think the reason I say about 23 is if the overall number is 23, that means that those individual numbers have gone,
right,
down. But I also think one of the other things that the governor, Joe, you asked earlier about the governors, one of the other things that the governors are concerned about is that this health care analysis that the Republicans are providing is built on faulty numbers, as is the overall budget proposal. And, you know, this, we'll see what the Congressional Budget Office now. It's interesting that they were going to have a score out today, but now that Senator McCain is ill, they're going to take more time that they have. And but they're very concerned. The governors expressed concern at the meeting that they just don't believe the administration's analysis of their bill because they think they're using, you know, faulty numbers.
And these are Republican governors. I mean,
right,
you've got
Republican
a handful
governors.
Of sure. Republican governors who are saying no to this, which will impact the 2018 elections.
Right.
So if you were John McCain in his head, getting into his head, what would you think he'd be thinking right now?
I'm going to take the extra week because if the doctors say 2 weeks, I'll take the 2 weeks, not the one.
Well, no, I think he's thinking about who he hates more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Democrats or
Trump. And
yeah.
I think it's Trump, to be quite honest with you, because he said we need to do hearings, we need to talk to the Democrats, we need to come up with a better plan. And so I do think it's Trump that he needs more.
And at this stage in McCain's career, he's not going to run another time. He's just won. He has the ability to be. I think at this stage of his career, he wants to be seen as a man of great principle.
I also think Senator Collins' quote yesterday on when she was on one of the shows, I can't remember which one it was on, I saw it.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. She, in response to what the vice president said at the NGA, they asked her to respond where he said that the Senate health care bill strengthens and secures Medicaid for the neediest in our society, and it provides a path to long-term sustainability. And she gave a very powerful response against that. And I can go through some of it if you want, but that the basically saying that that's not true, that it affects our rural hospitals, nursing homes, our disabled children, our poor seniors, leads vulnerable people more vulnerable. And how are the other Republicans, you know, that's not a Democrat saying that, that's a Republican. Mm-hmm. And how are they going to, I mean, I think she's giving them room to come on board on her side. And she pleaded for hearings, as did a number of the other the Republican senators, saying, you know, why don't we have hearings? Why aren't we, you know, discussing this?
Which we, of course, know the answer to, right?
Because if you have hearings, it'll become obvious, you know, it'll become more obvious that what everybody knows is that this bill is not good. It doesn't, it's not good for the economy. It's not good for individuals. It's not good for the insurance companies. It's not good for doctors or hospitals. Not good for nursing homes. Not good for schools. You know, the school issue is a really serious one. Because people don't realize that a lot of public schools and other schools depend on Medicaid payments because they're required to take care of, and I don't mean that in a bad way, just a matter-of-fact way, children who have physical challenges. And they are set to lose enormous amounts of funding. Yet the requirements will stay in place, but the funding will go. So how are schools going to handle that?
This whole thing is mind-boggling, mm-hmm. that we live in a country where our politics are so skewed that majority opinion is in favor of Obamacare, that they can't, that the legislators are so scared of losing an election to this man who is both a liar and all the rest, that they won't do the right thing. Now, somebody's wife or husband, in the case of an increasing number of women in Congress, will wake up and say, darling, you know, who cares if you're there next year? You got to do what's right.
It's like Jeff Flack. They're starting to talk. The White House is starting to talk to possible people to run against him.
Right. You know? And Heller as well. Yeah, they ran ads against him.
Yeah, I mean, they really are just ripping the Republican Party apart from the inside out and the outside in.
And the other thing that they're doing is denigrating the Congressional Budget Office. Mm-hmm. And
by a Republican, by the way.
Right. And this has been a nonpartisan analytical group forever. And this pattern that they have of anybody who's opposed to them, they feel that they have to tear down and disparage. You know, it's basically attacking
the rats. I seem to remember them going after the Congressional Budget Office decades ago. That's a long, right? I mean, isn't that part of the Washington culture?
I think the CBO has always been above the fray.
Yeah.
I think there are certain institutions in Washington that have always been above the political fray, and that we respect the information that comes out of it.
You don't always agree with it. You don't like it, but you don't.
You don't attack
it. You guys have the feeling
that
the Democrats are playing by the Marcus de Queensberry rules, and the Republicans are the hoods.
Right.
I mean, I don't get that. You know, the Democrats basically are afraid to come out and fight the way that you saw the kind of stuff that they were doing to Hillary and lock her up and all that stuff. It's really unbelievable.
So with that in mind, let's pause there. We need to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the Democrats and their approach and their role in this fight and whether it is enough or too little. We'll talk about all of that when we come back right after this. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussions this morning. I have to say, one of the things that since the election and as we were in the lead up to the election, our breaks have always been much more talking about issues of the day and sort of side comments. But I was just reminded of the good old days when we started the panel of how it got a little more personal and. That was good.
Right. I had started this whole new round, and we can get back to work here in a second, by saying there's this new thing identified by Libby as what?
Cold scoping.
So what they do is, you know, that roll of belly fat that everyone has, particularly as you get a little older, even if you're thin like me or Teresa. Everybody has that little role.
Guess we're screwed, Libby.
Oh, yeah, honey. I could have told you that a long time ago. We're done for.
Go ahead.
So they go in and they get rid of that with cold. They freeze it out. They get rid of that. And this started on Medical Monday 2 weeks ago or a week ago when somebody called up and said, how do you get rid of the belly fat? How do you get rid of belly fat? And I said, you exercise. Well, it turns out that's not exactly true. There is a thing called, basically, I'm making this up now, but permanent belly fat. That is belly fat that even if you've lost all this weight, there you are, and the doctors have this new machine that goes in and does that. Now, what's interesting about that is that after people have stomach stapling, right, we know this for a fact, they wake up and the diabetes is gone. So I'm thinking, my theory is that the diabetes that many Americans have, and it's an epidemic, emanates from the belly fat that one has that won't go away. And if the cold thing works, out it will go.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Why are we talking about this?
No, but isn't this more of a, this is not a medical procedure like the stomach stapling, or sleep
or banding?
Banding.
You go to some place and they do it.
But this is cosmetic surgery,
it's cosmetic,
right?
Well, doctors have this, but I think it's
surgery. But it's cosmetic surgery.
But I think you can attach any label you guys want to. But I'm saying,
but it's, I mean, it'd be I'm like saying, getting an eyebrow lift or a nose job,
cold sculpting, and it's like. It's like going to,
go ahead.
But let's assume for a second.
Tanning beds.
That the shark talk hypothesis is right. Oh. That the way you deal with,
pre-diabetes,
which is a huge problem or diabetes at a low level in America right now, and if it all resided in that belly fat, and we were able to get rid of that, that's not cosmetic. That's life-saving. Now, there will be a lot of people out there who say, you are so full of it, Alan. But the truth of the matter is, that's my thesis for the day, and I'm sticking with it.
Okay, fine.
It's just, we don't need to get into this, but from my understanding of it, it is like sculpting. It's just putting the clay somewhere else, right?
Well, I don't know how it can work.
Well, it's not like liposuction. They're not like
sucking it out of you. But
it's not invasive. They're just moving it.
Supposedly, it's
with the cold. They're moving it with the cold.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like freezing the fat cells, and they would go away. But
it's sculpting you. But I don't think it's actually.
I read about this in the New York Times, and that's no.
Well, I'm
minor
not.
League.
I'm not.
That's no minor
I'm
league.
Not saying,
well, there are TV commercials out for it now.
Are there?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah yeah. Not
when I watch television in the middle of the night.
On stations like HGTV. on stations HGTV, We Channel, all the ones that are targeting women.
In the middle of the night when I watch television, there's just a lady who is selling a four-cornered pan.
Well, that's because all you watch is QVC. That's all you can get up on the mountain there.
If you watch a different channel, there are all sorts of exercise tapes you can do to get rid of your belly fat. And there's also some yoga and Pilates combinations.
And there's some genetic factors that one cannot get over.
I'm not going to buy that.
Anyway. Okay, I can't believe we're talking about belly fat.
You think belly fat is as important as some of the other things that
we're
discussing?
Well, it's healthcare related.
It is very healthcare related.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Okay.
I think it's an important topic.
Let us go to
lettuce.
That's how you get rid of belly fat.
Eat a lot of lettuce and you won't
have
belly fat.
And then the apple cider vinegar.
During the treatment, clients recline while a clinician affixes a plastic suction cup.
Oh, it's like Passover.
Upholstery attachment to a vacuum cleaner to the targeted area. The cup, its size and shape vary depending on the part of the body being treated, is attached by a hose to a machine that hums as it sucks the tissue into the cup and cools it. The treatment lasts 35 minutes to an hour, depending on the targeted area. The effects are seen over a period of weeks after treatment. As the body eliminates the dead fat cells, it can take 2 to 4 months to see full results.
And doctors are buying this very expensive machine to do this with.
Well, doctors are also making a lot of money by charging a lot of this. The treatment is a course of procedures typically treating different areas of the body can run up to $4,000.
Alternatively, you can shut off all your devices and go out for a walk with your family after dinner.
That's what you say. That's the old thinking.
Or you could train for the Boston Marathon. Or...
But it is.
Okay, can we talk about the news now?
But otherwise, yes.
This is major news.
But I do want to.
It's major news for you.
But I do want to mention that it is a cosmetic procedure.
Yes, it is.
And not a medical procedure.
Right.
And I deny that.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
That's fine.
Thank you, Dr. Shartok.
Right. You have a PhD in political science, not an MD.
No, but I host Medical Monday.
Yeah, I know, because you're the hypochondriac of the world.
There's no...
And want everybody to
diagnose
you.
The last thing we should do here is to go around calling names.
Oh, yes? Yeah. Is that it? Yeah. Is that the last thing we do? I thought that was the first thing we do every morning.
So what about those Democrats?
What about those letters?
Well, Alan has a handful of letters, get to
those. I bet he's going to get a lot more pretty soon.
Right, they're coming.
Sarah's wildly
responding. You body-shaming people.
I'm not body-shaming.
Here we go.
Are you kidding me?
Why? Why am I body shaming? I'm just telling all my friends who have a little extra of that stuff and who are
okay. But if you all right, so if you said, I just want to get a handle on this. So if
a handle is the right word.
Okay, we're 10 minutes on body fat so far today.
All right, so I have a little puffiness under the eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I go in and I get that taken care of.
Can be done. That can be done.
Yeah. How would you feel about that?
Cosmetic.
Okay.
But I believe that the fat in the dead fat cells, as Libby said, or you said, in the gut around the gut there, I think that's life threatening, and that's not a bold.
Well, there is research that shows that.
Well, but Joe and I.
Oh
are
my
really,
God, we're still talking
we're still
about
here.
Body fat.
For now,
say a word
for now, we may not even get through the break.
No, we might not.
I did not say a word. I did not say a word about anybody except me and Teresa. Or Teresa and me or I.
No, you said you and Teresa didn't have to worry about it. The implication then did have to worry about it.
No,
I must have missed that one because I thought he said he didn't have to worry about it and I did.
No. You were grandfathered in. No.
Oh, I thought the opposite.
Okay. Somebody just wrote in and said terrible radio. So let's move
I agree with that.
See, I disagree with that,
I think
too.
It's life-saving radio.
All right. Go one letter and then
What about the apple cider vinegar thing?
Richard said, the Republicans have controlled the House and Senate for the past 7 years. Since January, they've additionally controlled the presidency. Throughout these years, the Republicans have made it their number one priority of overturning Obamacare. The fact that they have been incapable of doing so up to now indicates to me that Obama's legacy is rock solid. That's Richard. Not another one or another one?
Let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back after this. You know, last night about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I sat down and my wife was on the left-hand side of the sofa. The dog was at my feet. It was a very bucolic, beautiful setting. And I sat down with my laptop and I went through the news that I had seen over the last several weeks and compiled stories. And oddly... I none of these had to do with belly fat, and but this is why I love live radio and why I love the show. We got there somehow. I'm not sure where, but we got there somehow. And now, our letters pretty much are mostly just on this issue. Screw healthcare. Mostly on this issue.
I'm going to read
more. Okay, you start, and then Alan's got a whole handful.
Okay.
Hopefully,
good morning, panel.
Yes.
Good morning, panel. Good morning. Why would anyone support a health care bill simply because it's not Obamacare? For the same reason someone roots for any team that plays against the Yankees. Let's not be haters. Jack.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I would argue is more important than the other, but...
I'm still keeping the T-shirt.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
As is your right. All right.
Emma writes, Libby is right, and sometimes there are genetic factors where one cannot lose the weight no matter how hard they try. I watched my wife struggle for many years to diet and exercise with no improvement and instead ended up developing prediabetes. gastric bypasses changed her life, and now she's much happier and healthier. Almost no one uses the band anymore. Please do not spread the myth that these people who need surgery are cheaters or that you can't believe it. It's hurtful. By the way, I don't know that we said that. Did anybody say that here?
I do want to read a letter from...
I sure didn't.
I do want to read one letter here.
I hope I didn't, because I didn't.
No, I didn't.
This is from Christopher, who is a board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon, MD.
Hi, Christopher.
Removing discrete areas of localized fat from the abdomen probably has no real impact on cardiovascular disease or long-term health in the absence of making lifestyle changes that led to the deposition of said fat. Please note that visceral fat inside the abdomen is not affected by the cool sculpting technique. This is the really troubling fact that affects longevity.
That's interesting.
Thank you for writing.
I'm at 127 pounds yesterday morning.
Okay, you're disgusting.
And I have to tell you, that role is still there. And I'm sticking with my thesis, hypothesis, folks. Hypothesis is a thesis. And we get a lot of letters saying, you're not a doctor. What? You shut your mouth.
No, actually, this man says, hosting Vox Pop does not make you a medical expert.
Exactly. And by the way, there are a lot of people who are dying in the world. And it's, sometimes doctors have a lot to answer with. Okay.
Thank you, sir, for writing in and giving us that medical
hypocritical
advice.
Go ahead.
Because you're a doctor and we can believe you.
Hypocritical oath.
We truly do appreciate it.
And Virginia says, I agree with Alan that belly fat can be a health problem, not just cosmetic. Thank you, Virginia. I have a friend who had such serious diabetes, she used insulin. She got a belly band procedure, lost a lot of weight, was rid of her diabetes, and never used insulin again. And it is a relief to talk about something besides Trump. So there you see. All right. And Michael says, why are the Democrats so silent? Maybe they're just giving the liar in chief and his Congress enough rope to hang themselves. Yeah, that's why they're doing it.
They're not silent.
I mean,
why do you have this? They are part of this facilitating this national conversation on health care that's causing the Republicans to possibly oppose their president and go against something that they promised to do. You know, look at, anyway, they're not, they haven't been silent.
No.
Thank you for your
not
letter.
And Peter M.D. wrote in, when I heard the same term used yesterday to describe the surgery, that's McCain's surgery, not my surgery, I assumed it was a relatively benign surgical procedure. But then this morning I read in the New York Times that it was in fact, a craniotomy.
Right.
Yes.
Performed by neurosurgeons, not an ophthalmologist, in other words, an eye surgeon. The possible reasons for the surgery ranged all the way from subdural hematoma, relatively innocuous if treated early, to a rontal, R-O-N-T-A-L, rontal lobe metastasis from an earlier melanoma he was treated for a while ago, clearly life-threatening. It was my wife, a non-physician, who pointed out to me that using the term eye surgery is totally misleading to her. Okay.
But the real thing is we wish him all the best.
That's right.
Yes.
He's been through a lot, and
yes.
he's a true American hero.
Yep.
Whether you agree or disagree with him philosophically on different policy issues, he's a true American hero who puts country before party.
And my regular critic, Matt, wrote in and said, I just wanted to remind the audience that Alan is not a medical doctor. When's the last time anybody ever said that I was? I'm not one either, but I know better than to discuss my pet medical theories in public without an MD. All right. Thank you. And loosen up. Ellen said, I have read of medical research which found no metabolic benefits of liposuction. I wonder if the cold treatment would be similarly effective. And that's from Ellen. Alan is right, mostly, says Lisa. If you want to reduce health care costs, we need a lean society. We'd all benefit from this. Lisa in Montgomery. And Bob says, Trump's been bragging about the stock market rise. Previous presidents are wise enough not to do that because they know a 20-30% correction can come out of nowhere. And in fact, we're due for one. And I guarantee the con artists won't be tweeting about that when it happens. And that's from Bob. Good morning, panel. Happy birthday, Teresa. Alan, you're spot on. Read the stock market. Trump eventually will tank it. I took my money out almost the day he took office, and I'm not sorry, even with a temporary rise. Once it tanks, it'll be time to go back in, and that's Bob from Milford.
Thank you for the happy birthday, Bob.
Yes.
That's very nice.
Yeah. And Keith said, the day of Nixon's resigning, his poll numbers were 28% and higher the month before. Keith. I read it as it was given to us. Okay.
All right. That brings us up to date on the letters. Let's move on to other topics. Please. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And let's talk about the hacking attack. United Arab Emirates orchestrated hacking of Qatar, the government sites, sparking regional upheaval. That, according to U.S. intelligence officials. This was breaking news in a report from the Washington Post around 6 p.m. last night. The United Arab Emirates orchestrated the hacking of the government news and social media sites in Qatar in order to post incendiary false quotes attributed to Qatar's Amir in late May that sparked the ongoing upheaval between Qatar and its neighbors, according to U.S. intelligence officials. Officials became aware last week that newly analyzed information gathered by U.S. intelligence agencies confirmed that on May 23rd, senior members of the United Arab Emirates government discussed the plan and its implementation. The officials said it remains unclear whether they carried out the hacks itself or contracted to have them done. The false report said that the Amir, among other things, had called Iran an Islamic power and praised Hamas.
What do you want to know?
I'm looking to the panel.
Well, first
for
of all,
the
let's
first,
remember
the first
Trump,
round of.
Let's remember Trump over in Saudi Arabia talking about how wonderful the Saudis were and casting aspersions on the Qatarians. And now I made that word up. Okay. And therefore it is fascinating to me that now when our own intelligence agency said basically that the Saudis started it. That it gets very interesting, right? I mean, that here's Trump endorsing the Saudis in contrast to the Qatar people, where we have a major base and where we station all kinds of soldiers and airplanes and everything else. And there's Trump talking off the top of his head, just saying, well, what's the right word? Stupid things.
You know, this is like all the bad science fiction we read as kids coming true.
It is.
It really is. And it's destabilizing the world in general. But to further destabilize that part of the world, the Middle East, the Arab countries, for them to start now fighting with one another, you know, on one level, some people would say, yeah, that's good. Let them fight with each other and they'll knock each other out. But
no, that doesn't happen.
But that doesn't happen. And on a total worldview, it's destabilizing the region, which will destabilize every place else in the long run. And it's a dangerous situation.
Right. I think that on the incident itself, that this is yet another sign. You know, we've seen in the United States, we've seen in the German elections, the French elections, perhaps, you know, in other places, this use of cyber warfare, essentially, as the new warfare. And I think that's something that we really have mm-hmm. to get a bigger handle on. I know that the Obama administration had, in the State Department, they had a whole complex group of people looking mm-hmm. at cybersecurity issues, and certainly the Defense Department has for a long time, and the security agencies. But I think this notion of using cyber as a tool is something that is here. It's not in the future. It's here. It's now. And it's a problem. Separate but intertwined is the fact that, yes, indeed, Donald Trump, when he went to Saudi Arabia, essentially, according to the experts, gave a green light to the Saudis and Egypt and others to do something that previous U.S. presidents and others have helped keep in check, which is to go after Qatar. And Qatar, as you say, Alan, is really important to the U.S. It's one of our key bases, houses one of our key bases in that part of the world, and is really fundamental to our security in that region.
And one of the accusations, Teresa, against Qatar has been that the Qatar people have been too nice to Iran. And have been playing ball with Iran, and therefore, this is what I'm sure they told Trump. And it was also part of the hacking.
But they're also selling liquid LNG that other people want to sell as well. So there's a fight over who's going to get to sell resources to who. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. It's okay that you interrupted.
But you're right. I mean, they more take the side of Iran, but I still think that there's a delicate balance there. And again, I will go back to the boring fact that it's not a boring fact, but just I'm hounding on it all the time, is that the U.S. State Department is not staffed. And in situations like this, when the U.S. State Department is not staffed, that's a real problem because we don't have the expertise on the ground. And you also have a situation where you have Rex Tillerson and you have General Mattis from the Defense Department in there trying to quell the situation. At the same time, you have the White House fomenting it and speaking in different language, you know, taking different approaches. And that's a challenging for all of our allies and for other people in that region. But it's a real serious problem.
All right, let's get to some letters here.
Janice says, "You are embarrassing me and yourselves with the unusually inane conversation. I don't listen for discussions of body fat. Please stop this. Our world is in chaos, and this is all you can come up with? Wait a second. It's all? Have you been listening to the program today, Jan? I don't think so. Okay, and then, good morning, panel."
Good morning. Good morning.
"Nice to hear the laughter mixed in with serious discussion." Oh, I love Ray. Okay. "I sometimes wonder what the source of Mitch McConnell's extreme hatred for the ACA is. His explanations don't hold water and are basically lies. What do you think is the root of his total opposition?" I think it's fealty to Trump. I think he has to show that. I don't think this is the kind of guy who has, you know, extreme hatreds. I think he's just a political apparatchik who does what he has to do.
But I mean, this obviously comes long before Trump with his hatred over this bill. I mean, is it because of a hatred that he had toward Obama?
Obama were the Yankees, and he was the Red Sox or whatever. I'm sorry for making that.
I understand what you're saying, though.
So that's what it is. I mean, I think that's what it is. They're on the other side. Obama wanted to extend health care to people who didn't have it, and the Republicans, as usual, as in voting and anything else, reacted negatively.
But I also don't think you can divorce race from this equation.
I agree.
I agree. Sure.
I think that was really part of.
All right, you're hesitant on that. Why?
Yeah,
I believe it.
Oh, I think it's. I think
we're talking about just Mitch McConnell and the disagreement that he had from the very first day.
Well, but Mitch McConnell is a Republican. I think Libby's right. I think the Republicans. I think at the basis of this whole thing is that people of color in the United States, or they want to keep them in their place.
Right.
It's
and
that simple.
I think they just needed a basic rhetorical talking point to try to rally their base. And
their base is incredibly racist.
And when they started that talking point, there was not a lot of support for the ACA, for Obamacare. Over time, as it's begun to work, they continued that mantra. And they were not checked in saying, well, what would you do differently? But it's interesting to me that one of the big talking points that McConnell and his Republican senators are saying now is they're claiming that, well, what the Democrats want to do is a big bailout for the insurance companies, which is fascinating. But so, okay, if you don't do this quote-unquote bailout, meaning that's you help support the subsidies of individuals who are now insured who otherwise wouldn't have been. So if you don't want to go that route, then what are
universal health care?
The other option is either no access to health care for people who don't have the means to pay, or it's universal health care. And why isn't some reporter calling him on that? Because if you don't want subsidies, which, by the way, was the Heritage Foundation Republican approach that the Democrats went with, much to the dismay of many Democrats, you know, the alternative is universal health care or no coverage for people who can't afford to pay.
And here's a critical letter from Jeff. "I'm sorry to break the news to Alan, but John Stewart mocked Mitch McConnell, likening him to a turtle several years ago on The Daily Show. He did this several times over the years, particularly during the Obama administration. Therefore, unless it is your contention that John Stewart ripped you off, you are not the first person to like McConnell to a turtle." And that's regards from Jeff.
Well, I think that's exactly what Alan's saying.
What'd you say?
I think that's exactly what you're
John
saying.
Did John Stewart rip you off?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say that.
No, I'm saying. Well, I'm just
but he did.
Yeah, but he did.
You might have been the first person to call him a turtle on WAMC.
There you go.
I'll give you that.
I think I got expanded. I think you got to carbon date this.
Yeah. Oh, carbon date. I like it.
Well, that's with Alan's fat cells.
Reminds me of somebody I once knew. Carbon date.
Carbon date. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Let's go on and talk about. You ready for one more topic?
You're good.
Can you handle it? You want to talk about Russia? Oh, go ahead.
You were talking about what are the Democrats doing?
And, yes.
There's one thing that did come out in the last few days that I think it's interesting is that Ron Klain, who I'm a big fan of, Ron Klain. He's a Democratic operative, been around for a long time. He's the one that helps with all the debates, and he was in the White House and other jobs, but they raised $2.5 million to fund startups who develop democratic tools for progressive Democrats for people to get elected. So how to use how they're trying to essentially do startups, a venture fund to fund local startups to have better technology to help Democrats get elected with a focus on the local level. Because as you talk about, Alan, all the time, you know, you need to win these state races because then you need to do...
Oh, yeah, gerrymandering.
Gerrymandering, right? Mm-hmm.
Unless the court comes along and saves us on this one, which they may.
I think they may, too.
Maybe Kennedy's goodbye.
This is called Higher Ground Labs, and I think it's a fascinating idea. Campaign tech company startups.
It is fascinating. Yeah.
Can I ask a question, though, in our... Well, never mind. We don't have time for me to ask the question. But basically, it was a question, Alan, about... this fact. It was something that you asked John Fassel last week in the Congressional Corner about having in his district so many Democrats coming forward, and at what point do they do so much damage to themselves? And it seems we're seeing this nationwide of so many, because of Trump, so many Democratic candidates coming forward, that what damage do they do themselves?
They may beat each other's brains in.
Without coming up with a cohesive message and also a real leadership of people coming forward that have been primed for the punt.
One last thing, Joe.
Yes.
If you don't find good candidates to run against other candidates, you don't win. I mean, and that is one of the things that should have been learned a long time ago.
Although you look at 16 people running for president of the United States on the Republican side, and they bash their brains in, and you get Donald Trump. I mean,
that's exactly right.
It's not the problem is not having primaries because they can help sometimes. It's how you have the primary.
Great point.
And they haven't in the 19th. They haven't started killing each other yet.
I'm going to give you the last word.
That was it.
Oh, don't start. Don't end with death and body fat and death.
Oh no, we're good. We'll be back tomorrow. Teresa will be not with us. You'll be here on Wednesday. We'll see you next week, Libby. Mm-hmm. Alan, you'll of course be back.
I'll be here.
We welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. And if you're going to write a mean letter, we'll give you a different address. We love you. We'll be back after this.